today is June
19, 1997,
and this is the first of our summer programming of Out in the Open Conversations about Gay and Lesbian Issues. This is meant to be a conversation, it's not a presentation per se, and I've gathered up lots of material that can sort of help us in our conversation, because I sort of see today's session as an opening of conversation that can continue with folks here in the village and hopefully way outside the village as well. But there are a number of books that are available in the bookstore that I've laid out there, and there's lots of material that's available in the resource center. Most of them will be gathered around that cardboard slot there that says Gay Lesbian Issues on it. There are quite a few cassette tapes of sessions over the years that have been held here at Holden. I think it's under the index title of sexuality, and lots of conversations. Holden has been engaged in the conversation about gay and lesbian issues probably back since back in the 60s. So it's been a good safe place for people to talk and express views, and of course there's differing views and people are in different spots and have different opinions, and just ask that we respect and be open to one another's views and ideas and have a conversation that will challenge us and sort of move us along in some direction. So that's sort of the purpose. I've lived here in the community for 2.5 years, and I've enjoyed the solitude of the mountains along with the challenging aspects of being in community. It's been a really good spot for me to be. I am a social worker by training and my practice. I lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for about 7 years before moving here to Holden, where I worked. I spent 2 years working with people coming out of prison. Hey, come on.
Here
we
go.
This gay lesbian conversation?
Where's the...
No?
The next door. Confirmation test is next door.
They were here the last 3 days, I guess, for that.
Oh, we're in the same
session
room.
In this room.
Oh, what? I see, that's right.
This is one way to get new people to come in.
That's right.
Just have them sit down. So I worked mostly with homeless families in Milwaukee. I spent 2 years working with people coming out of prison, and then began working with the homeless. And did that for a while before needing to sort of take a break and come up here for a while. I'm an openly gay man, and have been out about my sexuality since about 1987. I sort of began my coming out process in a healthy way when I was probably about 19 years old. It was after my first year of college. It was the first time that I ever told anyone or suggested to anyone that perhaps that I was gay, even though I knew that I was gay from the earliest memories I had. I just give a little bit of information with that to give you a little bit of an idea of who I am. I'm very comfortable talking about my journey in self-discovery as a gay man and also as being a Christian. And some folks would say that those terms contradict one another, and I say they're beautifully weaved together. And so before I talk anymore, I think I'll just invite each of you to sort of maybe say a few words about yourself and maybe just say if you know someone who's gay, if you're comfortable talking about your own sexuality, if you have relatives, or what your exposure has been around the issue of homosexuality. And then if you have any particular sort of questions, and we'll just sort of start a conversation going and see where we end up.
Violet was in this room next door a number of years ago.
Actually, I was just sitting here thinking, and I think it's almost like 10 years ago this week.
Well, really?
We came out as parents.
Okay. Yeah, we came out in an adult forum in the evening, and that was the first time we had shared that publicly. And our daughter and her partner at that time, and Dorothy and I, did that, the four of us.
Okay.
And the place was filled, and I was pretty uneasy, but Holden being a safe place was a great place to do it with a full house of people. And we have been understanding ourselves and gay and lesbian people ever since. My name is Roy Santry, and our daughter Sarah, who now lives in Bellingham, Washington. So it's been just a very good time, good relationships. We have 4 children, and I am pleased and proud of all of them. And each is unique, and I am unique. And it's been fun. It's been good.
It wasn't easy at first. I mean, it took a year and a half for me to even say anything after Sarah came out to us. But I've said since that I'm glad I went from ignorance about gay lesbian issues toward, and I continue to work toward being informed. Mm-hmm. Ignorance to being informed, and I know that being informed is going to continue to grow. Go a long time yet. Mm-hmm. I also have gone from being afraid to being aware. Mm-hmm. And that continues to open up.
So the initial shock for you was just maybe just not having information and exposure just, and
that's right.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
Figured that maybe we were the only people that ever had this experience. Which we're finding out was not at all true.
Not at all true.
No, there had to be others also.
Yeah, but the feeling was
yeah,
that
the feeling.
I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm. And of course, about 10% of the population, 1 out of every 10 people, are gay or lesbian. So anyone that thinks that they don't know anyone who's gay is mistaken. It's just that they don't know anyone who's openly gay. Most of us have family members and have friends and have co-workers and members in our church, home congregation that are gay and lesbian. The question and the challenge is maybe, well, why don't I know about that? Or why aren't they open to me? What sort of signal am I giving that people aren't comfortable sharing their whole self with me? So, really interjection.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm Steve, and I guess for me, it was more a kind of a gradual conversion process. I was sexually abused by my 6th grade teacher, mm-hmm. who was male. And I think for a long time, when I finally realized what had happened, it was in my freshman year of college that I began to become aware of that whole abuse and that. I automatically projected or assumed that the teacher must have been gay, although he was married to the school nurse and things like that. And it's taken me a pretty long time to kind of separate those things out and realize that the sexual abuse had absolutely nothing to do with the sexual orientation.
Right.
It was an issue of power and some other things going on. And it's taken me a while, and I'm still, I think, in the process of dealing with some of the psychological scarring from that, particularly in settings like worship where you pass the peace. If another male comes up and hugs me, I want to do it on my terms. I don't want to, be approached and stuff like that. So I at least had the awareness and ability to recognize that, and I've shared that with some people that, if I can initiate it, I feel a lot more comfortable just because I still I carry that psychological baggage.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Minneapolis in 1990 with my family and joined a community there, the Community of St. Martin, which is very open and welcoming to gay and lesbian folk, and since then, I'd say prior to that point, I've only known at best 3 or 4 actual openly out gay people, gay or lesbian people, that were open and out with me. Mm-hmm. And in the community there are several people, and was able to take part in a wedding of 2 lesbians in the community. And feel very supportive about that. And yet, I continue to grow or continue to learn about things. One of the women got artificially inseminated and was pregnant and had a child. And trying to deal with that is something that was totally foreign to me as well. My wife ended up being a primary caregiver for the baby, probably for the first 6 or 8 months when Kathleen was working. My wife was taking care of Joey, and so we really learned to grow and love him. So that's been an area that I've been real stretched with. And I think the latest, probably about a year ago, one of the women in the community kind of announced her own bisexuality, and I remained totally baffled and ignorant about transgender issues and bisexual issues and things like that. So I really feel I have a lot to learn, and I feel more now it's more of an exciting road of learning and exploring ways of accepting people and understanding who people are. And one of the books over here, the No White Book, I felt was really, really helpful for me, because I come from a more fundamentalist or evangelical type of background. And the fact that he came out of that background and had worked for Graham and Falwell and all these people helped me understand the struggle he had, and also some of the political agenda that's going on now in the Christian right, and how they're using that issue as a wedge issue to fundraise, basically. Right.
The book you're referring to is Stranger at the Gate by Mel White,
yeah.
Which is available.
It hasn't been in paperback for, I mean, is this...
I haven't seen it in paperback before. So.
Maybe just newly out in paperback, I'm not sure.
But he was a ghostwriter for Falwell and directed or wrote some of Billy Graham's films and things like that, and basically has confronted them about the fact that a lot of people on their staff or a lot of people who they've been associated with through the years are closeted gay and lesbian people, and they're unwilling to really face some of those issues. They seem to be willing to use some of those folks for their own ends, but when it comes to addressing the sexuality issue, they're not at all open.
Thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing the story of the sexual abuse. It's a strong myth in our community that that gay men are child molesters, are out there molesting children. Well over 90% of child molesters are heterosexual, and that sort of abuse, as you stated clearly, doesn't have to do with so much with a person's sexuality. It has to do with abuse and power and power over another person, and it's an act of violence, not an act of person's sexuality or their expression of themselves. So thanks for highlighting that too.
I'm Bob Heller. I have had, through my adult life, a number of openly gay and lesbian friends I felt very close to, very comfortable about talking about homosexuality with them, with others. But the last couple of years, my sister, who I strongly suspected was lesbian, came out to me and my wife and also to my mom, which was a real trying experience. It continues to be a trying experience. I mean, my mother, I know, loves my sister very much, but is at a point where she just cannot accept my sister's situation I have to say that I don't know very much about gay and lesbian issues. I don't know much about gay and lesbianism, I've recently myself gone through sort of a revival of my faith and recommitted myself to Christ, and a lot of issues around being a Christian and homosexuality exist for me. My sister, who, we were both raised Lutheran, both confirmed in the Lutheran Church, had a similar sort of journey away from faith, or at least away from, away from faith, I guess. And I see her at a point where she sees this as sort of a wall for her, I think. I mean, I don't know where she is at in this whole thing, but I guess I was hoping through, you know, participation in this and learning more about sort of, you know, views of Christianity from a homosexual perspective. And, you know, maybe ways in which I could at least be some kind of a resource to her to, I mean, I pray for some sort of a reconciliation, you know, between her and God, and that maybe there's some way that that can happen through, you know, this kind of an effort.
Lots of, I mean, that's been quite an important issue that many books have been written on, and several of them behind you. Gays and lesbians have been in the church forever. Boswell, who's done a lot of historical perspective sort of research about gays and lesbians in the church and through history, has written a couple of really good books that sort of puts the issue of sexuality and how the church looks at sexuality itself sort of into a clearer perspective, or perhaps a fuzzier perspective, you know, that the church hasn't been good about talking about sexuality at all. And from that sort of closet of silence, you know, the darkness just sort of spreads with the confusion. And many gays and lesbians are disconnected from the church, which isn't, of course, the same as being disconnected from God. But lots of times we just throw all into the same bundle that church has along with us. So I would recommend a number of different books, and we can converse, you know, about it too.
Within the past couple of years, I've journeyed with three people who are, one who is questioning, you know, whether or not she's lesbian, and one who actually just recently has, you know, discovered that for herself, and just within the last few months came out to her parents and is just facing all the struggle that's going into being herself and, you know, wanting to be connected to her family. So I don't know. Anyway, I can just, and you know, she started, you know, having a, you know, getting to know someone who is also lesbian. They're not in a relationship or anything. But when it gets real into the, you know, nitty gritty of this is really happening, it just raises all kinds of issues for me. You know, my head says, you know, oh, it's great, but, you know, then when it, you know, gets into the concrete, it's kind of what you were talking about. So I'm here because just to hear, I think it's really important to hear people's experience to the whole thing about the church. You know, I'm a Catholic sister, and I really, you know, my faith is, you know, at the heart of who I am, but a lot of the, you know, I'm just really questioning how people can, you know, belong to Catholic Church, Lutheran Church, whatever. Not how they can belong, how the structure of church, like, you know, your distinction between being religious and being, you know, whatever faith you're part of. So anyway, I'm just at the point of, you know, really wanting to learn more. Not learn more, I want to experience more with people who really involved in what this is all about.
Talking about it too. Yeah, it's a whole different area. You can sort of do the reading and get the information and have it fine in your head. And then if you take that next step, or maybe it's not the next step, maybe it's the first step, but actually getting to know some folks that are gay and lesbian and starting to be open and allow yourself to have relationship with friends and families, you know, that are gay and lesbian. And then you begin to, I think that challenges us more at a core to just go, wait a second, they're just like me. They're just like everybody else. So it's sort of taking it from the head.
And yeah, and then how to be in the church and welcome people, like, you know.
Yes.
Who's the Bishop of Detroit? I can't remember his name now, but his brother is gay. Mm-hmm. And he's talked a lot, and he's come to St. Paul several times and has led workshops about the church welcoming gay and lesbian people. And he talked about his own journey and what it was like dealing with it himself and then dealing with his parents. Mm-hmm. And he's very welcoming and opening and really challenging the church to reassess its position. So when you have a Catholic bishop who's real clear in that, I think there are a lot of spots in the church that are very welcoming. My lesbian friends in our community, the one woman is the works for the parish as a worship leader, and she can't be out in the parish because of the bishop's rulings. But the pastor kind of unofficially co-celebrated her wedding with Kathleen, and with John Tran was the other co-celebrant. So that was kind of nice to see. He was not there in his role as a priest. He was there in his role as a friend of Kathleen and Robin. So that was pretty neat.
And the organizations and people that have searched for a safe fellowship within their denominations, groups like Dignity, within the Catholic Church, Lutherans Concerned, the movements that get the churches to be reconciled or open and affirming, different. And so that struggle, I think, for many years, gays and lesbians just left the church, said, well, forget it then. Forget it. And I think that there's been a bit of a reclaiming and a willingness to come back and go, well, you all need to learn something. And maybe God's put me here to challenge you and to sort of help move you along. And so I think gays and lesbians are coming back to the church in some sense. My home church in Milwaukee, Cross Lutheran Church, a good friend of mine a few weeks ago told me, well, it's the gay church of Milwaukee now, you know. Which was sort of fun, because in 88, when I first moved to Milwaukee, I looked for a congregation. And I had made a commitment that I wasn't going to be closeted, that I had gifts and talents given to me from God to share with a community of people, and I would find a community that would accept me for who I am. And so I sort of did some church shopping around and came to Cross, and they were sort of in the midst of figuring out if they were going to be reconciled, which means they state openly that they're for gays and lesbians to be full members of the church. And in a congregational vote, they decided to do that. And since then, every October, we have a coming out service. And several gay and lesbian couples have now joined the church, and other single folks. And it's just becoming a more open and sort of welcoming sort of environment. Our congregation is about 85% African American, about 10% white, and 5% Hispanic and Laotian. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful diversity of folks, but it's been a challenge there. But I think that there's a yearning, you know, to say, wow, I want to strengthen my relationship with God, and I want to do it in a community of people, and I want my gifts to be not only appreciated but also accepted and encouraged. And so hopefully that's sort of part of the movement that comes about. Being gay and being a Christian for many years was sort of an isolating thing, because you couldn't find a home, you know, a comfortable place in the church community, and being a Christian in the gay community wasn't always real celebrated. It was sort of like, well, you know, why do you bother, you know, when the church is so, you know, abusive in some ways towards gays and lesbians, why do you bother? And I just believe that there's a bit of a calling there, that the church can grow and can move also. And with some of Boswell's research about where perhaps the church had been in the past, that the church was more supportive and accepting of gays and lesbians, and just through time, we've sort of experienced backlashes. Culturally, we've experienced that same sort of thing. So as a church, it makes sense that it's happened too. Makes sense, and as much as it makes sense, I suppose. But thanks for sharing.
I'm Jay Oakman, and I come from Tacoma. My dad is a professor at BLU. And as a young heterosexual male, just having graduated from high school, I struggle daily with fear and prejudice that a lot of people have against gays and lesbians, and this kind of seems to be entrenched in our society, mm-hmm. and even in our church as well. And I strive to have an open mind, and one of the things I want to do with my life is study African American history, and along with combating racism, I also see homophobia as something that is connected to that, to racism. And recently I had, last summer, I had conversations with a lesbian woman who kind of joked with me that there's a lot of talk about the homosexual lifestyle. It's something that you choose. And she joked, well, what is a homosexual lifestyle? Mm-hmm. Mowing the lawn, doing laundry, something like that. She lives with her partner in Tacoma. And so, after talking with her, my mind was a little more aware of some of the issues that she faces daily. And so I'm not sure where to go with that. But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in our church and in our society to bring about more of a sense of justice and equality.
I think one of the things I've learned is that you can read all the books you want and study as much as you want, but until you get into a relationship with an individual, preferably someone who you don't know their sexual orientation, and only after you develop the friendship do you find out that their sexual orientation is different than yours, that you really begin making some of the connections. And that's why for me it's such a gift to have openly gay and lesbian people in the community who are willing to help educate me, but to do it in a way that I can relate to them as an individual first, and the sexuality is not the basis of our relationship, but just getting to know them as people. And then when you discover the sexuality piece is a little different, that's where the education comes in. And I'm convinced with, you know, there's a lot of folks, they've been, you know, taught since day one that gay and lesbian people are awful, whatever. You know, until you get to know somebody, and preferably not know their orientation until later on, that really is the way a lot of us are converted and really begin to open up and recognize some of that.
Because you don't see them principally as gay.
Right.
You see them as people.
Right.
That happen to be gay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult thing to do it racially, because you can obviously identify, well, in most cases. I mean, there are a few cases where people have passed for a different race, but it's really difficult with sexual orientation issues, because a lot of people you may think are gay or not, and a lot of people you don't think are, and it's,
well,
just,
yeah, I mean, the stereotype about masculine or feminine behaviors, you know, mannerisms being an indication of one's sexuality. I mean, boy, that I've been wrong more than right with that. One of the things, I guess I didn't want to go anywhere without, I don't know if you
have. No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that one of the issues for me with my sister is that she's, I think, really trying to find out what her identity is as a gay person. And so she's, and also because I think she's very socially interested in the plight of gay people in America, that she's very much an activist.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty I have with that is that It's right there on the table in front of us just about every time we're together. Issues about her gayness and gay rights and these kinds of things, which I think are important. But, you know, I'll give you an example. My son goes to a Christian school in Seattle that is probably not tolerant, or it isn't tolerant of a gay lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we talk about a lot with Jonathan, other than for him to recognize that our son, that for him to recognize that, you know, that's, he doesn't have to subscribe to that viewpoint. And it's not something that's part of their curriculum, but it is a more sort of fundamentalist sort of view of sort of biblical teachings. Mm-hmm. We went to my son to his kindergarten graduation, and my sister felt compelled to make that an opportunity for her to sort of tweak these people. And I don't see, I think that's kind of fun myself, and I think that it's important to do that to people who take themselves too seriously often. Yeah. You know, particularly if they're in your face about, you know, the fact that you're not, you know, that you're less than a, you know, moral human being. But it was my son's kindergarten graduation, and I'm having a lot of trouble sort of fitting all of this, you know, into the whole thing.
How long has she been out?
2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the same thing. I think that's part of the difficulty that my mom has accepting is because for my mom, she wants to see my sister as her daughter, first and foremost. But I think my sister wants to talk to her about her gayness. And, you know, and I think it's important for them to have a dialogue about that and come to some understanding about who they are, each of them, and all of that. But, you know, come home for Christmas and have it all be sort of a nasty experience because this is sort of dominating the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's really difficult. And I love my mom. I love my sister. I really want to be supportive of her. I have to admit, she has come out and says that she's gay. I believe that that's what she is, but I don't really know how one is gay, you know what I mean, or what process you go through, if you go through a process. You know, I mean, I just don't know anything about that. I wouldn't be surprised if she came back and said, oh, I thought it was, but I'm not. I mean, I just don't know, you know, where she is and all of that. That's where I think I have a lot of issues around the whole thing. It's just sort of having to sort of always be there, which is, I think, kind of in a sense, you're saying if I knew the person before they come out, that I get to know them as a person. Well, I get to know my sister as a person too, but now the gayness seems to be the only thing that is the basis for a relationship.
Do you have some experience to share that in the initial?
One of the hard things for me was that we were in Minnesota, and when our daughter came out to us, when we were in Minnesota, she was in college in the Midwest in South Dakota, and she came out to us and moved out to Oregon. I mean, so we just were not able to have conversation with her about anything. And when we did get together, we didn't want it to be a conversation about being lesbian or about the issues. We just wanted it to be conversation, mm-hmm, as person to person. But we also knew that it was necessary for us to talk about this. And it just took a long time. It took a long time. Yeah.
I think, too, that anyone who goes through that self-disclosure of deciding, you know, I remember Sarah saying, all basically through college is when she would, because between high school and college, she did as she thought she should do, dated a young man, and was in an unhealthy relationship, you know, where the young man was just, it was such a dependent. Mm-hmm. There was so much codependency going on that she was actually engaged to a young man as she started college, and thankfully that
relationship surfaced as being an unhealthy relationship and was broken. But then from then on through the rest of her college, she was just struggling, you know, well, who am I really? And she said she went, you know, carried, looked at every book. And of course, this was in 1984 to 87, when there wasn't as much good information out. And she said, I'd take these books and I'd read it and I'd say, yes, this is me. No, I don't want this to be me. This isn't me. You know, and that struggle of fighting till she finally said, yes, this is who I am. And I think once, you know, as I read other people's stories or hear other people's stories, once that realization and finally that almost a giving in to, mm-hmm. because, you know, I wouldn't want to choose this the way everybody is treated. Once giving into, yes, this is who I am, I can see where there's that overzealousness then, okay, if this is who I am, you're going to know about it. and, you know, it's kind of like if I can see other experiences in life, you know, if a child learns how to ride a bike, okay, I'm going to be out there kind of thing. There's just this, I would think, a feeling of release and almost excitement or celebration on the part of the person. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, and I know that the gay community is very good about helping each other, because Sarah told us, you know, the help that she had and how would she tell us. She gave us, you know, good books to read and told us about PFLAG and, you know, had laid a lot of groundwork and then was just very patient, giving us time. And because of the distance, it was really difficult, you know, to talk. You know, so I don't feel that we were, I don't think, she, I didn't ever feel she was really pushing us a lot.
No.
You know, the struggle or the, you know, some of the disappointment in the heart is, you know, she grew up in a parsonage and she still is not with the organized church. You know, that was a slap in the face to her. And it's, you know, we can see reconciliation pieces coming. But, you know, that's still been a difficult thing.
Yeah.
I think that what you said, though, was for support she's received from the gay community. I think sometimes we assume that there is this gay community out there that people can regularly, easily tap into, and that's great if folks find it.
Yes.
But there are a lot of gay and lesbian people out there who don't, who are kind of out there alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe part of the discomfort your sister may feel or not is, until she really feels accepted for who she is by a group of people, she may feel the need to continue to mm-hmm. kind of evangelize or whatever as part of the convincing of herself of who she is.
Right.
And when she's able to relax as far as who she is, then it may not be as much of an issue all the time.
Right.
Yeah, that's, you're right where I was going to go, even with my own personal experiences. That initial weight of just going, this is it. This, and I can remember very distinctively the evening being on my knees next to my bed praying to God again, just going, I don't, you know, I've prayed for years for this to be taken away, and I've tried all these things to change, and da-da-da-da-da. And I just felt God telling me, you are a blessed child, you know?
Yes.
And it just, like, thousands of pounds just went off my shoulders, and I was like, this is it. This is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's learn about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, there's an exuberation, there's a freedom. That's why I asked how long had she been up. A couple of years isn't very long.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when all the gay t-shirts and bumper stickers get bought.
Yeah.
You know, years, because you do want to have, you want to fight back against the prejudice and the hatred that you've experienced.
All the repression.
And all the repression. It's
yeah.
just sort of, you know, so it's somewhat of a reaction. And then as the years go by, it just becomes just another, a part of you, a more comfortable acceptable part, and let's sort of have patience and have time, and if she's talking about it a lot, it's probably because it's a lot of what's going on with her, and to find the other things that's maybe going on with her other subjects, and just sort of be available to hear her, what she needs to speak about, but then also encourage and welcome her to sort of share what's sort of going on. But I know for me, in my family, for so long, you know, it was never talked about, and then when I came out, it still wasn't talked about, and I tried to push it for a long time. And now it's not talked about big, but I feel integrated into the family system pretty much like everybody else, like any of my other brothers and sisters. So my mother will ask me about my relationship in much the same way that she might ask my sister or my brother. It's that sort of comfort that I really yearned for, that I wanted it to get to that spot.
Yeah.
But I felt like we needed to have a time where I could sort of bring the issue up and say, hey, I'm not going to pretend like I'm not gay. You know, this is, I'm not going to let you just talk about everything else and not talk about who I am. Mm-hmm. And now it's become sort of more easily integrated. That's not true with all of my brothers and sisters, but it's a little more than that.
Yeah. One thing is that my sister sort of put me in this sort of, we were in this kind of this triangle when my sister came out, because I don't know how your daughter came out to you, but my sister chose to come out in a letter to my mom. And I sort of have, I had a lot of misgivings about that myself, although it's her thing, but she could, you know, and then they were both called, you know, she gets it, my mom calls me, doesn't call her, you know, and my sister called me, has she called yet? No, you know, and I'm like right in the middle, and it was very odd thing to be, and I, finally, my mom just called my sister, and then they kind of talked and things, but my mom, who is a widow, remarried a guy who was raised a Missouri Synod Lutheran, who thought that maybe that wasn't fundamental enough, you know, or whatever. For him, he's now a Baptist, and my mom and he go to the Baptist church, and I'll tell you, he's whispering in her ear how bad she is. And I like the guy, you know, and I want it. There's this other thing happened here, this relationship with my mom, between my mom and her husband. And I'll tell you, it's a weird place to be.
Lots of dynamics going on
here. Yeah. Mostly I just try and kind of let it be, you know, and not get too worked up about it. And fortunately, my mom and my sister have reached some sort of a point of dialogue where they don't talk about the fact that my sister's gay, but they do talk about, you know, the fact that they're mother and daughter, and they have that relationship. And my mom has told me that it doesn't matter to her, but she doesn't want to talk about it.
One of the things that I really liked in the last year, Doonesbury had a cartoon where one of the characters is gay, and he gets into this relationship with another guy, and he's super conservative. It just kind of breaks down a lot of this other stereotypes you get along with gay and lesbian people, that they're all liberal, they're all this and that. And, you know, to see some of these members of Congress coming out, and other very conservative people coming out, I'm kind of wondering what the dynamics in a couple of years in the Baptist community and some of the other more conservative denominations, when they realize some of their political heroes, some of their social heroes are gay and lesbian, it may help them to rethink. I mean, for the most part, you know, in the last 10, 20 years, most of the outspoken people in the gay and lesbian community have been fairly liberal to radical as far as their politics.
Yeah.
And so it's very easy for somebody who's conservative to begin with to kind of write them off. It's not only your sexual orientation I can't deal with, but I hate your politics too. Mm-hmm. And now that, you know, I think culturally it's becoming a little more understanding that it's a lot more across the board, and that may help too. I mean, people use theological arguments, but I'm convinced there's a lot more underneath it than just their reading, their understanding of Scripture. There's a lot of other baggage that goes with that.
I think a lot of misunderstanding about sexuality. One article that I might point out is this article, Homophobia Doesn't Lie. It's an interesting case study that was done that sort of highlights
I mean, people that are aware of the spectrum of sexuality. Kinsey did his studies in the 60s that showed that human sexuality is really on a spectrum, that we're not exclusively heterosexual or exclusively homosexual, that we're on a scale from 1 to 7. And that there are some folks that are perhaps exclusively homo or heterosexual, but that is a continuum. And what this study showed is very interesting. It measured a group of, I think it was 60 men, measured their level of homophobia with a scale called the homophobia scale. Then it measured their levels of aggression, or their capacity towards violence, I think is how it's laid out. And then it did an experimental whatever. They hooked them up to some electrodes and showed them short video clips of explicit sexual activity between men and women, between men and men, and between women and women. The result of the study basically said, and then they asked the men, well, were you sexually aroused by that at all, or were you interested by that? And what the study sort of shown, which is something that I've thought at least for a long time, is that men that were even slightly aroused by watching the men in sexual explicit video were, number one, were not aware of their arousal or denied their arousal, and were perhaps the more aggressive. Sort of summarizing that would be that many times when the gay bashing, or as you were pointing out, making reference to Mel White, and some of what he has to say in Stranger at the Gate, that idea that the when we're full power into a movement against gays and lesbians, that it's sometimes a reflection of our own discomfort with our sexuality and where we're at, and not being aware that you might have an attraction, you might have had a dream about a man once, or you might have some attraction that's homosexual. That doesn't mean that you're gay or lesbian, it's just a reflection of your sexuality. But if that scares you, and you express that fear by gay bashing or by, getting involved in a movement against gays and lesbians, it's a reflection of perhaps your own fear and discomfort. The article is there to read. I'm probably not summarizing it very well. But I think just that basic information for folks to hear that, that it's okay if you had an attraction, or, you thought about your really close friend once, or you were aroused for a moment or something like that, that's not something you have to back off and be so afraid of, that it's just perhaps part of who you are. Some conversations that I had with folks here last summer were really interesting, because sometimes in the group I feel some pretty strong energy coming from somebody that would say, what do you mean you're gay and you're a Christian? That's impossible to be. And I'd say, well, let's talk more about that later on. And so many of those conversations finally, after an hour or two, sort of distilled down to someone saying, well, my son just came out to me, a few months ago, like, I just don't understand that. So it's a personal sort of connection. One gentleman shared with me, a few years ago I had a dream and I was with a man once. I mean, what does that mean? And it was just, that was the energy that was built up behind him saying, no, you can change if you want to. And there was such a relief for him when I simply said, so do you think that means you're gay because you had a dream once? I mean, do you think you're gay? No, I'm not gay, I'm attracted to women. Okay, so so just that reassurance to say that it was okay, but that's not information that we very often get, especially when we're in a society that makes us want to assume that everyone is heterosexual, and that's anything different than that, someone choosing to do something.
I think language so many times can set, the wrong understanding and the wrong tone. We use the term gay lifestyle. Well, you said, what is a gay lifestyle or a lesbian lifestyle? I'm sure that what my lifestyle is much different than another heterosexual woman's lifestyle would be. I mean, I surely don't want to be identified with some people's lifestyle who are also heterosexual. I think we stereotype by using the term lifestyle. We've often said that because we didn't have the information or the language, in our home, we didn't ever talk about gay or lesbian or bisexual, you know, sexuality issues. Sarah didn't have any language. I mean, she didn't have any language to go by. Didn't even try to discover who she was, for one thing. I don't think I'd ever said the word lesbian more than maybe in a college class or something until I found out that I'd been living with one for 22 years. You know, it was just not part of my language. Right. And, you know, thank goodness these last few years, the language has gone into TV. We have Ellen and, you know, all kinds of ways that the language at least is more available. But I think then using the proper language, and so that we aren't, when we say life, gay lifestyle, I think that just can conjure up the wrong image of the gay people I know.
I think the reason we use it though is the church has always had a problem with sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so part of the way the church is trying to deal with this issue of sexual orientation is to talk about, well, someone's orientation, and we have to distinguish from somebody acting on that orientation. And so we talk about somebody being hetero or homo as far as orientation, but it doesn't mean that they have to act on that. And so we use the code word lifestyle to mean somebody is a practicing their sexuality. And the church, you know, some congregations and some denominations, whatever, you know, have made some real distinctions that, you know, well, if you are gay, if you are lesbian, that's okay, God still loves you as long as you don't practice it. Mm-hmm. And so the term lifestyle has been used kind of as a wedge as well to distinguish between somebody who may be gay or lesbian and is kind of ashamed of it or something, but that's kind of who they are, and so, you know, God still loves them, but we sure don't want them to act on that kind of thing. And it becomes a very dangerous thing, but it's part of the learning process for people, because we don't understand sexuality as it is. Gay or straight sexuality, the church has had a real difficult time talking about it.
I think a lot of my struggle in growing up, and I think why it took me so many years to finally accept who I was, because I didn't have terminology, nor did I have any sort of reference. I mean, I grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota, which was 13,000 people at the time, a large farm community. And I'm sure I probably knew other gay, lesbian folks, but the only reference I had was jokes. Or, you know, comments in school and
locker room.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And then I tried to find some books and do some reading. There wasn't much there. And then, you know, I could start to hear that there was, you know, this place downtown Minneapolis where some gay folks hung out and there's bars and people just, you know, sleeping all around. I thought, that's not who I am. Then maybe I'm not gay, but I'm not attracted to women. I'm attracted, you know, so I had this idea of like, well, if that's what gay is, I'm not that.
Right.
Yes. That's not who I am. Mm-hmm. But if being heterosexual is this, that's not, well, what am I? Who am I? So it took a long time. And it had to deal with some of the stereotypes of masculinity and femininity too. It's like, wow, if I'm supposed to be heterosexual, you know, I'm supposed to act like this, as opposed to being feminine, whatever that is. But it was finally in that unraveling of stereotypes and expectations that I finally found more of a clarity of sort of an individually created person of God, and with different gifts and expressions. I like what Jay brought up earlier in regards to even your commitment to wanting to confront racism and including homophobia in that, just coming out of high school. I always, in my sessions, I want to encourage us to continue to talk about this, and not just because we should, but because it's a matter of life and death, as I see it, with the rate of suicide amongst the gay and lesbian teens. A gay and lesbian teen is 6 times more likely to commit suicide or attempt suicide than a heterosexual teen. This article, which was published in 1994, says that 30% of
of successful adolescent suicides were because the adolescent was gay or lesbian, as was indicated in a note that was left behind. I'm thankful that my times and thoughts and mediocre attempts of suicide when I was a teenager were not successful, but that was certainly what I contemplated on more than one occasion, not being able to find a way out of it. So I really think that we need to be talking about it, and that it's a matter of life and death, that it's a matter of saving lives.
Yeah, it's a really big thing in South Minneapolis. One of the high schools has a support group for gay and lesbian students, and you know what we're finding now in Minnesota is that there are an awful lot of folks in rural areas who feel no support at all. And it's amazing how many young people are moving into Minneapolis because there are some resources there now and things like that. But it's still a pretty controversial thing, you know, that there's always some of these groups out there, you know, demanding that, you know, they can't have this in the schools, and, you know, they're trying to indoctrinate us and stuff like that. But you're right, it's really critical. I mean, going through teenage years is tough enough, and going through sexuality issues are tough enough. But if you find yourself in a real distinct minority and oppressed because of that, it's real tough.
I was really glad to see we bought a Pioneer Press before we left the airport in Minneapolis yesterday, and I was reading the article. The St. Paul School District, you know, has been dealing with budget cuts, but it said in there they did decide to keep. They have a program called Out for Equity, and which means that they do support having groups. Support groups within, you know, as organizations within the school, like you have baseball and you,
right.
have, you know, other clubs too. And they did leave it in the budget, mm-hmm. which is pretty unusual and,
yeah.
and really speaks well for what they are doing. And then, of course, District 202 and down
there. Right, right.
In Rochester, we have, I've been chairing a board, we started a new organization called Gay Lesbian Youth Services.
In Rochester?
In Rochester.
Yeah, great.
And, well, we've been going for, what, six years about now.
Mm-hmm.
And our main, you know, we try to offer, we've not been able to get into the high schools very much at all. We've got, you know, a few counselors here and there. At least now, they will, if a student comes out to them, they will refer them to the GLYS phone number and we have a group. Now the group is back up to, I think they have been having about 7 students meeting together just so that they have a safe place that they can come together and talk to each other and, you know, find someone else, and it's always with a supportive adult.
Mm-hmm.
And then our second purpose is education. In the last 2 years, we have applied for grants, and so we have held a couple of sessions called Invisible Youth, Visible Support, and we've invited all the youth leaders, you know, church youth leaders and people who are in the counseling agencies and so forth to come. You know, we've gotten about 25 people, which, you know, in a big city of Rochester, that we sent out something like, what, 300 notices, I think, or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a beginning.
Yeah.
That's
great.
We're, you know, we're hoping to just continue. I just ordered a video. The Massachusetts Department of Education has a video called Safe Environment in Schools. Safe School Environment or something like that. But they actually have a video, and if you send them a blank video, they'll send you one. And so I just ordered that and hope to be able, if we can just start meeting with some counselors and some administrators in schools, kids tell us.
Yeah.
It is not an easy place to be.
Yeah.
I mean, they're either, like you say, somebody even leave life,
yeah.
and or they check out and go to an alternative school or something. And a couple of our young people have gone to the Fine Arts School in the Twin Cities, because at least there they can be themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your work in Rochester.
Yeah. Well,
Winona's just starting a peace play group. I don't know if you've been in touch with them or not.
Yep.
Yeah,
oh, good.
I think they're meeting. I just got a letter from a friend of mine. They're meeting next week, I think. But they're going to get some folks from Rochester and La Crosse there, I think, to kind of help.
We have people in Rochester.
Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, we had a woman from Winona here, not last month, but the month before, who was saying she was hoping that they were going to get a...
It made frontline news in the newspaper.
Oh, really?
Something like that makes frontline news.
Which sometimes is unfortunate because then folks, I don't know if I want to go there, depending on who's there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough move to go even to that meeting for the first time.
Yeah.
And who's going to see me there?
But I wonder if they, if they had if they'd never had a miniature train club before, if that would make front page.
In Winona, it might be.
One other thing I wondered, Rose, and I don't think we can cover, but one of the things that I really struggle with is when folks recognize their sexuality after they've been adults for a while, have entered into marital relationships, and it means breaking up a marriage and the impact on kids and things like that. And that's been a difficult thing, and finding ways to, on one hand, wanting to support family and all that, on the other hand, wanting to recognize, a whole new awareness. I mean, if you haven't recognized your sexuality, enter into a relationship, and 5-10 years down the road, and it's been a real difficult thing in the Mennonite church in Minneapolis. The couple that was pastoring the church, she came out, and kind of the marriage is part of that dissolved, and it was really, really traumatic for the whole congregation. But it adds another dynamic because people have strong feelings about divorce, and especially if there are children involved. And well, if you've lived with this person for so long, why can't you just continue and all of that?
That's another gift of having the conversation and going on. I think, we can come to awareness at an earlier age and not get into those tracks where we think society expects us to go. So I think a lot of middle-aged and older folks that are in relationship, often I'm not sure if it's like an actual awareness, like, oh, I'm gay. I think it's pretty much known all the time, but we've been able to keep it suppressed enough.
Well, Mel White was real good in his book talking about how he entered that relationship because that's what society expected of him. And he was going through therapy, he was going through all these other things, thinking that at some point he really would grow to love his wife sexually, in a real way, that it was kind of a statement of hope. And then only when he came to the realization of who he was, and it's still a very difficult thing to deal with when you make that kind of commitment. Well, what does that mean if you really are a different person or come to recognize yourself?